This is Secrets to Win Big, your roadmap to sustained growth. Brought to you by Arjun Sen, founder and CEO of Zen Mango, top brand growth driver and a former Fortune 500 executive who has been called one of the most marketing intelligent minds in the business. Find him at zenmango.com. And now, here's your host, Arjun Sen.
Welcome to Secrets to Win Big with Arjun Sen. Today, it's totally my pleasure to welcome my VIP guest, Bruce Summers. Bruce Summers is an amazing storyteller. He has been the chief storyteller at Syncbox, a company Bruce founded after a decade of direct response TV advertising that he has done. He pioneered brand response category, and to date has directed and produced more than 500 campaigns. And just to give you an idea, these are the brands: DirecTV, Visa, Microsoft, Citibank, United Airlines, Starbucks, Cascade, Dawn, CoverGirl, Hamilton Beach, Omaha Steak, and to name a few. And this is the part where I share my personal opinion and point of view only. This did not come from Bruce or anywhere. I really feel in every brand's life, there comes a story. And the story pivots the brand and takes it to a new direction. Just like a ball, when a golf ball leaves the golf club, if it is 0.001 degree little off, it goes way to the right. The right story can take you totally at the right direction. And I personally feel that Bruce puts brands with his stories on the path to bigger success. So Bruce, welcome to Secrets to Win Big.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'd also add that every person has a brand and you need to guard it with everything you have.
Well, I love that. So Bruce, let's go right there. So when you talk about every person being a brand, being a storyteller, even though you work with brands, let's talk a little bit about persons. What's your advice to a person to look at what the brand is and how to portray that brand forward?
Well, I always start, whether it's a client, an actual brand or a person, I always start with authenticity, because you can't be something that you're not. And a brand can't be something that it's not. So it's part reputation, but it's also part of who you are. And we have lots of examples of people who are very insecure. And you say, well, that's not a good brand. Well, you can look at many performers who have taken their insecurity and gone on stage and become amazing, famous singers or in a band or something like that. And brands sometimes will want to put forth one image and you feel that it's inauthentic. And you say, and someone sitting in front of their TV or in front of their computer doesn't sit there and go, there's something inauthentic about it. They just feel what I call the BS light. A light goes up over their head and their subconscious, and they said, there's something about this I don't trust. And even when a brand makes a mistake, when they wrap their arms around the mistake and say, hey, this is what we did, we're doing everything we can to rectify it, if they do it from the point of view of sincerity and authenticity, that moment in time can actually increase brand loyalty. And that's all through just trying to find, even when the sky is falling, there's something that a brand can admit and be transparent about. And if they are, they're going to get a lot more people favoring them than criticizing them.
Because what I loved is you put it in very simple few words: sincere, authentic, and those two things gets you to somebody you trust, and that's where brand loyalty is. And I just remember a similar advice came to me on a personal front when I went through a divorce, everything else, and finally I was getting ready to finally open my life for that amazing person. A friend of mine told me, Arjun, till you accept yourself as who you are, nobody else will accept. That was such an amazing advice. And what you're talking about really echoes by saying, you know, we all come as is. None of us are perfect. That imperfection is very important. And the second thing you mentioned, I really want to hit home, is you talked about the mistake, the sky's falling. Just imagine, Bruce, if I work for you It's better if I come to you say, and boss, I made a mistake, here's a plan, versus using Arjun again. So I really think that the whole thing about that part of authenticity, as you talked about, is owning life imperfections and building on it. That's huge.
You brought up a great point too. When someone makes a mistake, when they come to you, if you're the head of the company or you're their superior, and they come to you and admit there was a mistake, but here's a plan. It may not be the right plan, but nobody wants to hear, I made a mistake, and make that the end of the conversation. If you say, I have a mistake, and this is what we do with our clients all the time. It's not necessarily mistakes, but you come to hurdles. And they're often unexpected. And after doing this for 30 years, there's still new things that come up, things that I may recognize as similar to others, but they're new nevertheless. And rather than go to my clients and say, we have a problem, this happened, we say, we have a challenge, and this happened, and now here are three different scenarios that we can pursue to deviate or rectify or make it even better. I always think that hurdles are thrown in our way. It's kind of a spiritual approach. They're thrown in our way to actually make us think harder and improve whatever it is we're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, and I love the way you put mistakes as unexpected hurdles, and they are here literally hidden opportunities to raise the game. It's just if you and I were in high jump or pole vault, the moment you raise the bar, it gets me an opportunity to jump higher. Love it.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, and put it another way, I saw this on Instagram. Not that I get all my pearls of wisdom from Instagram, but I did see something that rang true the other day. They said, a winner is a loser who tried one more time. And I thought, that's actually really true. A lot of people forget that Alexander Graham Bell, who invented the light bulb, he actually failed 1,000 times before he made that light bulb. And that's true with so many people in engineering and science, because it's all about putting hypotheses out and then testing if they're true. Most of the time, it's going to be hard to test that they're true. That's true in life. That's true with every relationship, whether it's personal or business.
Yeah, and I think there are so many stories on, you know, the light bulb is an amazing example. A personal favorite of mine is Kentucky Fried Chicken. Colonel Sanders starts his journey at the age of 60 when he gets a Social Security check of $105. This guy has an amazing recipe and an amazing way to cook chicken, but nobody wants it. He goes restaurant to restaurant to restaurant, and it's documented 1,001 times he was rejected.
Wow.
1,002nd time was in Salt Lake City, somewhere there. And this is the thing I have learned with amazing salespeople. They look at your last no has nothing to do with the next one.
Yes.
And that is fascinating. I want to go back to something else you talked about. An amazing mentor of mine, Blaine Hurst, one time told me when he was the CEO of Papa John's, he told us, it's okay to make mistakes, but he gave us two rules. Don't make the same mistake more than once. That's stupidity. And second, he said, I will reward you the sooner you bring a mistake to me. Because the sooner you bring it to me, instead of covering it, you give me and the rest of the team more time to fix and elevate that opportunity. And that really changed the culture for us. Like, no longer, like, think for a second. If both of you are little kids, the principal said, whoever breaks the rules, come here first, and you first get a candy before you get consequences. I would rather go get the candy and then get the consequences every time. And that made it a fun game for all of us as we go forward.
Well, it's very true. And when you think about it, a lot of people are nervous in a business environment because their livelihood is on the line. They think. They don't. And a lot of people, it takes a while, I think, to trust sincerity and authenticity and facing some of the mistakes that we all make. But in a relationship, we know that if you don't address the tension in the room, I'm talking on a one-on-one personal relationship, if you don't address the tension that's in the room right away, that can fester and turn into something much worse than it ever was intended to be. So it's to your benefit. I mean, who doesn't want to get the monkey off their back too? Rip mm-hmm. that Band-Aid off, face it, and get past it. And as you said, it's very true in sports. In sports, if you're the type of person who just threw an interception and then dwells on the fact that they threw an interception, you're never going to make it as you increase through college and pros. But if you're able to say, that was the last play, you know, the next play is a brand new game, you already have an advantage over a large proportion of people that you're playing with.
Yeah, and I think you're taking me to the other side. Is earlier we talked about the responsibility of me, the person who works for you. Now you're talking about the person as the supervisor, the boss. The boss creates that environment. If you go back to the most recent Super Bowl, you know, independent of who we support, Christian McCaffrey has an amazing season and one of the first plays where the 49ers were absolutely close to scoring, he fumbles. Okay? This is the first time this guy's fumbled again. I don't have the right map. Let's say in the last 30, 40, 50, 100 times. Okay. It's a game. It could be a tournament Super Bowl defining moment.
Yes.
Just trusting him and just like, hey, it happens. You're human. And moves on and he gets the ball again. And he just, even though they didn't win, but he had an amazing game and the team rallied around him. And it's such an amazing opportunity for coaches to set the culture as you go through. Go ahead, please.
Oh, I was just going to make a little joke. There's a little bit of a scab picking there because I'm from San Francisco. So it was a rough day for me it was an exciting game, but rough at the end.
I understand. I was rooting for the San Francisco too. I personally, because being a Broncos fan, I didn't want the Chiefs to win. So
right.
49ers in two different paths.
Exactly.
I want to go back to the storyteller. Okay. I just, you know, in a world where everybody is a storyteller, and sorry to use that word, but there's only one way to go through is there's tons and tons of fake storytellers. Okay. What's unique about your stories? Because, Bruce, it's not just me. People over decades have respected you. And the best way today we show respect is we pay. Buy stories from you. That's the best respect I look at, is that's proven. What's your uniqueness?
I hate to keep ringing this gong, but authenticity and sincerity. Storytelling, people always say, oh, that's a really funny title that you've adopted. But in my mind, all we are our stories. That is how we got to where we are today, whether you're an individual or a business. So your stories and unfolding those stories have similarities to other people's stories or other businesses' stories, but there's something unique. There are unique details in every story, which differentiates every individual and every business. So by telling stories, you're saying, here are some things that have happened, and some of which you're going to relate to. And then there's these handful of things that are the details that stand this apart from what you're used to hearing. So the familiarity allows people to lean in and sit there and feel like, oh, I think I know where the story is going. I've experienced some of this. And then you introduce the details that differentiate it, and now it penetrates. So as a business, you're increasing brand awareness, brand recall. If you've told that story authentically and sincerely, then somebody already goes into those details with a sense of trust. And that's what you're really trying to achieve. I think Dale Carnegie, I might be mistaken. There's a book called The Speed of Trust, and it's meeting people where they are. It goes in a different direction, but I always like that idea of how fast can you get someone to trust you, or how fast can you trust someone else? And the more authentic and sincere you are, including, you know, adding a little self-deprecation, which sometimes is just admitting some of your weaknesses, really allows people to get to know you and get to trust you. And that's true with businesses as well.
I want to start where you started. This part of the conversation was, we are our stories. Okay, that's such a beautiful thing to look at, is that connects to authenticity. Because sometimes the authenticity word has so many syllables. I just struggle with words more than one or two syllables. But I really think that was a great definition of authenticity. The moment you said, we are our stories. And I also love the way you brought these concepts together. It's the unique details, but the unfolding of that, that's the fun part. Now, in this process, I want to push you on the other side. Let's say Arjun right now is a brand. I'm making a, you know, storytelling about myself. How do I keep the balance of being authentic, but at the same time, not go too far where I'm beating my own drums, like, me, Arjun, look at me, Arjun. Like, come on, Arjun, shut up. Like, how do you keep that balance of relating the story instead of going too far?
Well, there's a great book by Robert Greene called The 48 Laws of Power. And one of the laws is never appear perfect. Because the reality is perfection doesn't exist. However, that shouldn't be defeatist, because the pursuit of perfection, I mean, every major religion has that Messiah icon that is the perfect one. But even in that, when you look at our different messiahs or leaders, there's always something, some misstep in there. And growing up in an Irish Catholic family, you know, everyone always looks at Jesus and says, yeah, but he turned over tables in the church. And, you know, so he wasn't perfect. And the reality is he wasn't, because he was man. And we're all men and women trying to navigate this world. And so when you're talking about yourself, I think peppering in a little self-deprecating humor, admission, and letting people know, I'm telling you this, but I'm also trying to be as grounded as possible, so that you know that I'm not high on my horse. I'm just trying to share with you some of my successes. And don't worry, I'm going to share some of my failures as well.
And I love the way you brought the concept of the Messiah or super God or God. I was working with this absolute incredible quarterback of all times. In fact, I was meeting him for the first time, where I met him the day after he had a first round loss. And that year they were supposed to win the Super Bowl. I meet him and he's so calm. He's worried about Arjun, what beverage to serve me. And after like 5 minutes, I called a timeout. He's like, what are you calling timeout? I'm like, no, I need a timeout. He said, about what? I said, I just have to ask you, how the heck are you so calm about this whole thing? He said, oh, Arjun, when I was a kid, apparently his first coach told him this, that anytime there's an interception, it happens because of three reasons. One, my receiver did not run the route. Too bad. The other guy made the play of a lifetime worse. Why did you have to do it now? But if it was not A on B, his dad took him to church. His dad had asked him to look very closely at Jesus, he's Catholic, and said, just look at closely at Jesus and see if Jesus looks like you or you look like Jesus. He said, first time I went, I said, Dad, I don't. Dad said, see, you can make mistakes. He can't. And he said, Arjun, after the loss, my wife and myself, at 10:30, we went to church. We had it open for us. I went closely and looked, and I was so relieved. I made bad plays that day. It wasn't the receivers. It wasn't the other team. I made bad plays, and it's okay. I had a great night's sleep. And I really think that whole pursuit, as you talked about, of perfection, but not looking at yourself as the absolute, becomes huge. And as I'm sitting here in my office, I have this amazing poster of Michael Jordan, and that there's this amazing ad, Nike ad, where he talks about 9,000 times I failed. You know, that's the number of, you know, shots he has missed. like there are 34 times he was given the game-winning shot he missed. And it says very clearly, I have failed. That's the reason I succeed. That's beautiful. So, Bruce, from failure, and, you know, I want to take it to, for you to do this, like you are a very smart human being. You could have done 10 things, 15 things in life. Not only you're good at this, you are enjoying doing this. What does Bruce feel when you help a brand or an individual find the story? What does Bruce feel at that point?
It's interesting. Continuing with the sports analogy, if a quarterback has a fantastic game, throws, you know, 400 yards and throws for four or five touchdowns, if that quarterback lives on the goodwill of that past game, they're already setting themselves up for failure in the next game. So, and I am a proponent of let's celebrate the wins, but you have to moderate the celebration, because every time I intersect with a new client, a potential client, I have this history of success, but I also have some failures in there. And I know every new client presents an opportunity for me to do my best, but I need to go back to being that guy who pitched the first time, who did his first commercial, because I was so aware, all my senses were firing, and I was so aware that if I don't thoroughly think through every single thing, every shot, the wardrobe, the set design, every word and what it means, if I don't approach every campaign with that kind of meticulous attention to detail, then I'm setting myself up for failure again. Now, the key is to not be scared to set yourself up for failure. Don't be scared of failure, because how many films weren't made? How many athletes never achieved what they could do? How many people never met the mate that was sitting there for them because they were scared of failure? You have to be ready with the possibility of failure. And I believe that's with every client that I intersect with. I have to go in and say, here's what I know. Here's what I don't know. Here's what I have learned so far about your product or service. Here's the, and you've seen, we do a SWOT analysis for every new client. And strengths and opportunities are very easy to list. They're usually on a website, and you digest them and parrot them back. The weaknesses and threats are not listed anywhere. And so I'm always going out on the edge of a limb by saying, here are some of the weaknesses and threats that we have identified. That's not a criticism to my potential clients at that moment. That is an acknowledgement that nothing's perfect. Goes back to what we were saying. So if nothing's perfect, including your brand, your service, or your product, then let's identify where those weaknesses are and protect against them and guard against them. So let's tell stories that will make those weaknesses and those threats insignificant in the consumer's eyes. If I don't approach each new client with that kind of there's an energy in your body that you feel, and it's everyone knows what distress is. There's another kind of stress called eustress. If you're a Tim Ferriss fan, Tim Ferriss wrote The 4-Hour Workweek. And Tim Ferriss identifies eustress as that kind of stress that's invigorating. If you don't approach it, and those I often call butterflies, you know, when someone, when a skater is about to skate in the Olympics, you know, those butterflies, like, I've done everything I can now. Now let's go out and do it. I have to approach every client that way, like it's the first time I've ever had a client, granted on a foundation of a lot of experience.
And, you know, as you're talking about this, the thing that resonates is the saying that we have all heard: every time you don't try, every time, every question you don't ask, the answer is a no or a failure. And on a lighter note, on a golf course, you know, one of my amazing buddies always tells me that 100% of putts that don't get to the hole never go in. So you really have to get there. You have to make the effort to get there as you're building. And, you know, I started my career at Pizza Hut, and there was an ad and a commercial we had talked about. You know, it was a cheesy, pun intended, pizza where the cheese and the toppings went all the way to the edge. We called it the edge. But I felt that ad had incredibly deep life meanings where we talked about, have you been to the edge? Because in life, if you don't go to the edge, you always play really safe. You do not know how far you can go. And that's the part where that you stress that you're talking about, that feeling of I'm close to something big, is very powerful. It's you know, it's fascinating. So taking all this, sorry, go ahead.
I'd, it's similar to the power, the enduring power of just do it. Everyone talks about that as probably the greatest tagline ever. And because in that, it's empowering. Just do it. Just try. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? You're going to fail. But it's not a failure. It's a lesson. You're going to grow. One way or another, you're either going to achieve it or you're going to fail. And that failure is part of the growth pattern and you're going to overcome it. Just do it. It's still to this day the most amazing thing to say to anyone, let alone assigned to a famous brand.
Love it. Bruce, taking all these things before we walk away from storytelling to other areas, what are some common mistakes people make? Of course, you and I never make mistakes. We know that. But what are things that other people, other storytellers can make?
The idea of settling. The worst thing, you know, for anyone who's ever been in a relationship, let alone married, and you ask your spouse or your significant other, how are you doing? Fine. Nobody wants to hear fine. And nobody wants to do fine. If my clients, if I ask them, you know, what do you think of this concept, this story, or any aspect of it, any of the elements that we create, and they say, it's fine. That's probably the worst thing that you can say to me. I'd rather you say, I don't like it, because I can react. I can push against that. Fine is just walking through sand. So settling for an actor or an actress that's just fine, for wardrobe that's just fine, for cameras that are just fine, all of these things, I fight for the best actor we can afford, the best sets we can afford, the best cameras. I finally stopped having the arguments about cameras. We just bought the best cameras you can own, because I don't want to denigrate any of the imagery or any of the storytelling tools. So at the end of the day, where you push against any settling, anything that's fine or mediocre, it's not the actor or the wardrobe or the sets or even the words by themselves that are going to determine success. It's the aggregate of all those. I call it, we just win these little 1% here and there. We're 1% better than the next team that would be doing that, but we're 1% better in multiple categories, even down to the fact that people say, oh, you know, it already looks beautiful. I say, yes, but there's this company that's been making things look even more beautiful for many decades called Technicolor. Let's run our color through there. They've seen more images than I have, and they know how to make them more beautiful than I can. So let's take our footage and make it that much prettier. Is that 1%? Maybe it's 2%, but it's by itself not going to determine success, but it with all the other 1% that you strive for, I think is the differentiator between what we do and what some of our competitors who are not as successful do.
And, you know, as you were talking about, the big thing that hits me is when you settle, even in an area, unlike in business school or academics, if I get all A's and one B, my grade point will be 3.9 something, which is still good. But in a storytelling or business, your lowest grade defines you. That becomes your grade. And that is the difference I'm learning about life. I think in my relationship with my wife, Chitra, out of 365 days for 360, or this year, 366 days, for 365 days, I'm nice. And one day, I'm a jerk. That jerk behavior will stay with her. and that will define, and that will hurt her, which I don't want. So I really think that is huge as we go through. I want to take this and take you to a very different area. This is the part where I want to embarrass you a little bit.
Okay. Here it comes.
I know. This, I told you there would be a surprise today. And I asked three individuals who really know you, have worked with you for a while. And I started at a very professional level, but it's their fault. They did not stay at a professional level. Okay, they went personal. It's not my fault. And I have records to show that they went there. I asked them a very simple question. Tell me about Bruce, the storyteller. And this is the part where the ultimate proof of authenticity is they could not define you, the storyteller, or separate you, the storyteller, from the person. So these are a few things that went there. I really want you to appreciate, because these people really poured their heart out. The first thing they talked about is the ability to tell compelling stories featuring real people. And the real people was very important, because fake stories do not resonate. Real people's stories resonate. Second, talked about the word dedicated. Dedicated and dedication to me is the best interest of clients and the team. And it starts with no ego. The third word that came out was commitment. And commitment was described as the projects to people, but the more important was start to finish. And what you're talking about details, I think, is very important. And then this was really unique, because if you ask somebody about me, I hope even one person saying that will mean a lot to me. Talked about maintains a constant sense of happiness even during a demanding project. Very important. Because when we are working together, if the stress of the journey starts beating us up, when we cross the finish line and win the trophy, half of us would be dejected and smile forcibly, just like, you know, kids smiling with parents, and it's not fun. And finally, the last one was always takes the high road in life and business. And that person even added and wanted me to mention, it's a rare commodity that you don't see. So I think the lesson that I got here, Bruce, is where we started at the beginning, it's about authenticity. If the person is not authentic, he cannot be a good storyteller. And people connect around you or other amazing people and successful people because of authenticity. And that, I think, is more than the storytelling. So I'll just keep quiet and let you react to your thoughts, reactions to this.
Well, first off, what wonderful things. I appreciate that. That's, I guess, my brand. I'm sure those same people have seen me get a little testy, have seen me feel tired. But overall, I feel blessed that my dedication and my consistent hard work shows to other people. And I don't think I'm any different from anyone else, except for the fact that, I mean, let's back off. Biologically, just take God out of it for a second. Biologically, it is amazing that any of us are born. It's statistically, it's absolutely a miracle that any of us are born. And just based on that, everyone walking this earth should have so much gratitude for just being here. That's not the case. And it's not the case for most of us, myself included. After that, everyone has hurdles. Everyone that I've met has been thrown a major curveball in their life at least once, if not multiple times. I only had it happen to one person. I was out to lunch with the chief marketing officer to a large adventure clothing company that you would know of. And I shared with him some of my stories, and he goes, "Wow, that's really fascinating." I said, "Well, I'm sure you've been thrown a curveball. Everyone has had some challenge in their life." And he sat there and he thought for a second. He goes, "No, I can't think of anything." And I immediately started scooting away because I thought any moment now lightning is going to come down and hit this gentleman. But you have shared with me some of your health challenges, and I was really lucky that at 5 years old I was run over by a car and almost died. In fact, apparently my heart stopped on the operating table and I had a massive head wound. All of these things gave me this realization of, oh, everything that I'm experiencing now is a bonus, not supposed to be here. I had to get over why I'm here, that sort of survivor's guilt. Once I dealt with that with a little bit of therapy, now I sometimes I feel stress, or I feel like I'm in an arena where I've never seen this set of problems. How do I maneuver this? I can take a deep breath and say, do you know how many people would kill for my problems? I'm the luckiest man in the world right now, even though this is the most uncomfortable thing I've experienced since the last uncomfortable thing. And that grounds me. That gives me the chance to take a breath and think clearly. And now I start to figure out, okay, what's my plan A, B, and C to rectify this situation? And that seems like it's easy when it's a small situation, but it's easy when it's a huge situation. A lot of people say, whatever I'm, divorce, bankruptcy, losing your house, losing your business, all these things, which are huge. You work the problem, you remove the obstacles. And I always am reminded of the adage, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
Amazing. And as you're talking about, my heart goes to an amazingly wise person in my life who came in as a handyman, Ventura Rodriguez. Okay. During my divorce, my ex hated him and he hated my ex. So I inherited Ventura in our divorce. Okay. And I did not realize, even though I lost financially, money comes, money goes, but people are priceless. Absolutely. So one time, Ventura had installed this fan. I'm in bed, on top of bed, the bed is the fan. I just turned left as I was watching TV and I heard something. Next second, I realized that fan had fallen. So I called Ventura and I'm just like screaming at him that, trying to kill me, this, that. And I told him quite a few times, you nearly killed me. Ventura showed up. First thing, he wanted to make sure I cook some food for him. He was hungry. And then he looked at and showed me there was a bad screw and he replaced. And I was still not done. I kept telling him, Ventura, you nearly killed me. As he's leaving, this Deepak Chopra-like moment he had in his life to tell me, there's nothing like nearly almost killing you. There's not nearly almost dead. You are either dead or you're alive. This fan is dead. I'm taking the fan, will trash. You're not dead. Live. What an amazing wisdom. Like, I should have paid him double or triple that day because that's the part where I really learned that things don't define us. We define things in our mind. All the challenges that you give, they are just a hurdle.
Yes.
There's a price, there's a path around it, over it. Somehow you can go. Because think for a second, Bruce, in your life, my life, every person on this planet, we have had thousands of challenges. That hasn't stopped us from living. We are here today because we overcame every challenge. And I also want to build on that one thing you talked about each one of us. It's a very important thing you said, and it hit me hard. Each one of us, it's a miracle, as you said, we are here. Forget God, religion for a second. I also think because it's a miracle, which means the world was designed for every one of us here. The world needs every one of us. Like, the world does not give you more oxygen and me less. World does not put you in business class or first class from the oxygen or light. No, we all get the same amount. We are all same economy or first class equal. And I think there's something amazing that you said that's there. So Bruce, I want to take you beyond by saying, where is Bruce going next?
Where am I going next? I'll tell you, about maybe 5 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, I had this idea because we all have relationships with people, and some people are givers and takers, but we all have those people in our life who are just takers. And if you have energy that is positive, if you have energy, what I call light, if you have some light, people are attracted to that light, and that's nice. And I'm humbled and grateful for that. But you have some people who just want to take, 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 because they are lacking light. They're lacking inspiration. I don't judge them for it. However, I had to sort of put my big boy pants on and realize I can't be the light giver to everyone. Even I need some give and flow. So I applied that to some people who were friends, but I realized they were taking too much. So I actually made the very uncomfortable decision to excise them from my friendship community. I didn't say anything bad about them. I ceased nurturing the friendship. And I felt like this lift. Literally, I felt like I was retaining more energy. So then I thought, I wonder if this works with clients. Because you know the 80-20 rule, you know, you want 20% of your clients to create 80% of your business. And I had this sector of clients who were just soaking me, taking all my energy, because I will give, give, give. As somebody said, I'm dedicated, and sometimes dedicated to a fault. So I started actually trying to manifest positive, what I call, and this is very California, touchy-feely, high vibrational clients. Clients who are reactive, who are smart, who challenge me, but also have a trust with me, so that we have this wonderful symbiotic relationship. I know that I still work for them, but I am happy to serve them because we now all have a clear goal and there's trust there, so that I don't have to hold their hand on things that should be sort of the point of entry of trust. So what's happened now is I work just as hard as ever, but I actually have more bandwidth in my head. I have more time for my family because I'm not preoccupied about, gosh, does a client trust me? Do they understand? I know that that's where we are. I just have to work hard for them, but I don't have to work hard 24/7 because that would be unhealthy. So where does the future go? The future is continuing this balance with my clients because I love what I do. I really enjoy. I don't know that I'll ever retire. Somebody will just say you're too old and you're done. I love what I do, but I also understand how important it is, for instance, to go to yoga, to plan a couple weeks in the Alps to go for a hike if I can afford that. That's the closest I've ever felt to the face of nature. So it's really just always striving for balance.
Love that. You know, to me, I'm not as smart or articulate as you. I have a very simple rule I follow. I don't work with jerks. I'm sorry. I have this jerk alert that is there because you have a choice. Like, think, Bruce, the wealth that you and I both have, we both have 24 hours in our day.
Yes.
We both have and secondly, we have a choice. Every second you choose what you want to do. And that's the blessing, fortune. We are both fortunate that we can do that. So I felt that's the part. Why not exert the choice? Because sometimes we don't. And then we talk about life is going the wrong direction. No, let's use the choice. So I'm going to take this to a totally different direction. So at the end of this, you know, conversation, you open your email and you get this invite that you have to plan an event for three Bruces. Bruce, 18-year-old, Bruce today, and Bruce, 100-year-old. So where will that meeting happen? And what would each one of them say, 18-year-old you and the 100-year-old Bruce in that meeting or event?
Well, I just mentioned it. And my mother used to always say, if you want to see the face of God, go out in nature. And a couple of years ago, I actually did a hike in the Alps. I walked around Mount Blanc, and I learned it's supposed to be 14 days. I did it in 7 because that's what I could negotiate away from my wife. It was simultaneously the most difficult thing I've ever done, and the most spiritually uplifting. And the reason I bring that up is because I would want to go to a mountaintop and have this meeting with the three Bruces, so that, because the mountaintop, now we're in God's country. We're literally, you are closer. If you believe in heaven, you're closer to heaven even. So all of those spirits, all of our ancestors hopefully are shining down on us. And the 18-year-old is the one who I'd want to engage the most with, because the 18-year-old, frankly, is an idiot. And I was no different. The only reason I have any pearls of wisdom, and I'm still learning, but the only reason I do is because I have faced failure so many times. I continually face failure. And sometimes I always overcome it, but sometimes I avoid actual failure, and other times failure hits me smack in the face. And if I could tell my 18-year-old that this is life, you know, there's that graph of success, and everyone thinks that it's a straight line. But the reality is, and you know this, and everyone listening to this knows this, that the path to success is a very jagged line. The more an 18-year-old can embrace that and understand that every setback is in a time of intense learning, and that that's going to propel them, that's an invaluable lesson. And it took me a long time to learn that. I remember one time I had a huge change coming in life, and it was very stressful. And I was talking to someone who happened to be Buddhist, and they said, "Well, you know what we say?" And I said, "What?" And they said, "Congratulations, because you're on the verge of great growth." Mm-hmm. And I learned that probably in my early 30s, and have really embraced that idea. I think maybe I knew it instinctively before, but not consciously. But it came to the forefront of my consciousness after that. So that's the conversation and where I'd want to have it with the 18-year-old. The middle Bruce is who I am now. Was that the question?
Yes. And the 100-year-old, what would he say?
Okay. Where I am now, I need to remind myself that I am enough, that I am not my work. Even though I do the best I can with my work, it doesn't define me. That all of this is, to a certain degree, fantasy. To a certain degree, it's real, but what is like the absolute truth is who loves you and who you love. And immediately, how does your family think about you? At the end of my life, and I'll get to my 100-year-old, I've never read anyone's biography where they said at the end of their life, "I wish I would have worked harder." So that doesn't mean don't work hard, but make sure you don't obfuscate those moments, that time. I mean, there are times where it's been uncomfortable, where one of my daughters comes to me and says, "Can we talk?" They have an issue. And I may have something huge due the next day. But I recognized early on that you can't tell your kids when you're going to talk. They tell you when they're going to talk. Okay. So you take advantage of that. And those moments in life have bonded me with my kids, that we're inseparable. We're ride or die. And I wish that for everyone. Now, my 100-year-old, I'm imagining me at 100 years old would be more of a soothsayer talking to the younger ones. And the main thing I would remind them is, your soul is pure. Your soul is with you all the time. Your body is not your soul. So make sure that you're consistent, authentic, and sincere with your soul and your actions that way, no matter whether you're 18, 50, or 100. Because when you're 100, you can look back, and if you can say, "I, with all authenticity and sincerity, lived each day in that manner," that's a successful life. It's not measured by what you own, how many trips you took, who you know. It's measured by whether or not you were true to yourself. And I think that's a hard thing to be. I'm still learning it.
Thank you. I love that. So Bruce, thank you. You took an amazing amount of time, and I really appreciate how from your heart you shared. But before we wrap up, out of fairness, if you have any question for me, I would love to try to answer.
No, a blanket statement, I'll be honest with you, something like this. It's easier for me to talk about a brand as somebody else, another person. I think it's difficult to talk about yourself. So I really just want to thank you for indulging me, because some of the things that come out of my mouth, I don't prepare. And you've seen me pitch. I do outlines, but I don't really read what I've written, because you have to feel the energy. So I was feeling your energy, and I appreciate your energy and how you were feeding my soul. And I also appreciate you letting me indulge myself.
Thank you. And as we wrap this conversation, I want to go back to where we started and the word authenticity. And one of the things I really want to point in this conversation that really hit me was, Bruce has a very spiritual side. And in this conversation, he was very free. He brought his passion, his beliefs out, but at the same time, he did it in a very unassuming, unforcing way. It wasn't a tightrope walk. It was an authentic walk, which I really think is very important, because we are all getting into this world of political correctness. And in the process of political correctness, we are losing a part of ourselves, which we don't have to. So to me, this was a great learning on storytelling, but it was a bigger learning on how to be authentic and be you. Bruce, thank you. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. This was really a lot of fun and nurturing.
You've been listening to Secrets to Win Big with Arjun Sen, founder and CEO of Zen Mango, top brand growth driver and a former Fortune 500 executive who has been called one of the most marketing intelligent minds in the business. To learn more, visit www.zenmango.com. Share this podcast with your friends and subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts. This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.